We are the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short, and this is ACAM Learn.
Hello and welcome to Mind the Kids. I'm your host, Mark Tebbs. I've spent my whole career working in mental health services in various guises, from frontline service provision to being Director of Mental Health Commissioning. Currently chief exec of a charity, so I'm really interested in grassroots organisations and, you know, how we really make community impact. In each episode, we talk to researchers and practitioners about their research. It's an opportunity to shine a spotlight on the latest research in child and adolescent mental health. Probably today, the most important qualification from my perspective is being a parent, because today we're going to be talking about parental monitoring. I'm delighted to be joined by Isabel Axe and William Pelham from the University of California to discuss parental monitoring in an episode that's called Monitoring versus Knowing, Rethinking the Parent-Child Dynamics. Isabel and William have recently published their paper in JCPP Advances, and we are going to dive into a conversation with them now. So Isabel, could you tell us a little bit about where you're based? I know you're in the States, and a little bit of your research interests.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Isabel. I currently live in California, in San Diego specifically, and I work at UC San Diego as a staff research associate. I graduated from UCLA a few years ago with a degree in cognitive science and a computing specialization, and have kind of been riding the wave on psychology research since then, and will continue to in the future because I'm going to graduate school next year to get my PhD in clinical psychology.
Excellent. Really lovely to meet you. Will, same question.
Yeah, so I'm a clinical child psychologist, and I'm here at UC San Diego, and I'm a professor, so I do research, and then also I'm a clinician, so I see kids, teens, and families in our psychiatry clinic here at UCSD.
Great stuff. So I think with this podcast, I think we'll probably divide up into kind of two halves. So the first half, we'll be talking about parental monitoring generally, and then we'll kind of dive a little bit more into the kind of specifics of your paper. So I guess as part of the preparation for the podcast, I was talking to my son, and he's finished his university. And I was talking about parental monitoring, and he said, well, that's just spying, isn't it? That's when you're spying on us, Dad. So could you just tell us what parental monitoring actually is, and what it looks like in that kind of everyday context?
Yeah, for sure. I'm really glad you brought that up, because I feel like when we say parental monitoring, it sounds like this official technical term for spying. That's really funny. But, you know, really, it's actually a lot more casual than that. It's things that parents are already doing, most parents already do, like every day. Basically, we're just referring to like anything a parent does to get information or to know something about their child's life. So it can be, you know, as simple as asking your child about what they're doing today. You know, you can find out how they're doing in school by looking at a, you know, school report. You can get to know their friend, you know, very casual things. It doesn't necessarily have to be like, you know, going into their room and looking at what they're doing or spying on them.
Perfect. Okay. That's a great example. So I guess the other thing that I had the conversation with my son about was he disclosed some of the things that that I didn't know about from his childhood. And I guess I imagine that there's some kind of tensions around parental monitoring, particularly in those teen years when there's some of those higher risk behaviors. So is parental monitoring like a common cause of tension?
Yeah, also a great question. I'm not a parent myself, but I've also had lots of conversations with my mom about this. And a huge, you know, tension within the parent is like, how do I balance supporting my child's autonomy, their independence, but then also making sure that they know that they're safe and that they're taken care of, and giving off the impression that I actually care about their life, right? So there's always going to be that to juggle. So to your question, I think like in some cases, for sure, it can cause a little bit of tension if the parent and the kid aren't really aligned on what's going on. So if the kid feels like, okay, my parent's looking a little bit too much into what I'm doing, they're tracking my location too much, why does this need to happen? But of course, in other cases, it can be, you know, super beneficial and actually lead to some positive lines of communication between the parent and the child.
Will, did you want to jump in there?
So it's a great question. It's always a balancing act. And I hope, Mark, whatever you found out didn't scare you too much from your son there. So I think it's easy to say at one end of the spectrum or the other, right? If as a parent, if your son had never done anything you didn't know about, that would probably mean you were a little too intense, right? On the other hand, a lot of the families I work with in clinic, part of the issue is it's gotten kind of out of control what the teenager is involved in and what the parent's aware of. So it's a balancing act. And, you know, that's part of what Isabel was getting at in the paper here.
Yeah. And I guess it was really interesting, Isabel, you started that response about talking to your mum. And I imagine that parental monitoring has changed quite a lot. There's a generational shift. Is that what you found?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think, you know, when my mom was a kid, it was all about, okay, you know, lay out your plan. If you're going out with friends, tell me about it, right? And then I'll hear about it when you get back. Now we have all of these new digital means of getting information about your kid, tracking their location, texting them while they're out, getting like real live updates on what they're doing, right? So it looks very different now than it used to. And I'm sure it will continue to change and evolve over time. And that's why I think it's really important, you know, in this paper, we're sort of trying to like figure out a way to study parental monitoring in a very specific programmatic way. And of course, the way that we study parental monitoring is going to change depending on the type and form of monitoring, right? Like as we go on.
Is there any advice around how parents can, you know, reach that balance? Is there a rule of thumb around kind of how that balance is reached?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Mark, and I wish there were a simple answer, you know, where I could say, do exactly this. All depends on the kid, the situation, and the parent, right? One of your other questions, though, kind of goes to the way I think about, which is you asked about trust, right? And I think of trust as kind of the foundation. Why is trust important? I mean, one of the main ways as a parent that you can monitor is talking to your teen, right? Asking them how they're feeling, what's going on in their life, right? If they don't trust you, you're not going to get a lot of useful things out of a conversation like that. So that's kind of the bedrock, trust. It also goes the other way where as a parent, if you don't trust your teen, that's also going to make it hard to monitor, right? Because you're going to be really tempted to go to what the word you used at the beginning, Mark, the kind of snooping, right? You'd be tempted to go more toward that, be less respectful of kind of privacy, independence. If you feel like you just can't really trust what they're telling you, you can't trust them to make good decisions. So when you ask about where to fall, how do I have balance, you know, granting independence and privacy and also monitoring that to keep them safe, I go back to, do we have trust going both ways in the relationship? As long as we have that, maybe we're in a good spot in the middle.
Yeah, I think that's incredibly helpful and it really resonates with my parenting experience. It's kind of, I think our monitoring behavior kind of shifted as, you know, the changes that our children were going through and kind of like the level of concerns we had. But I guess at the heart of it, we were trying to, you know, provide as much kind of freedom as possible whilst kind of keeping them safe. But it kind of felt like a very dynamic, changing process.
Yeah, as you say that, Mark, actually, maybe I'll take that answer from you and use that in the clinic because I like that way of thinking about it. Your goal is to give the most freedom you can, right? And then the way you ramp down is only what do I need to do to keep them safe? And like you said, for some, as I mentioned earlier, depends on the teen and the situation. You just spoke about a thing that's true of all teens, which is age, right? The way we monitor a 12-year-old would be very different than the way we monitor an 18-year-old, right? If it doesn't change, that's a problem, right? We're not getting our teenager ready to go out in the world and be independent.
I'm wondering what happens, you know, you must see this in the clinic, sort of like when that trust breaks down and what impact that has on parental monitoring.
Yeah, I would say by the time I see families in the clinic, it's almost always a big issue. The trust has been broken, right? And not just trust, but there's a lot of conflict around the monitoring, right? So whenever the parent is trying to do it, it's pretty annoying to the teen, right? It feels, you know, invasive and bad. And then for the parent, the trust is broken down where they don't really trust that the teen is telling them the truth, for example, like about what's going on or what their plans are. So it's often the first thing we do in therapy is work on that. And if you were a parent who's feeling that way, I think that's really a time to think about getting professional help, right? Because rebuilding trust is something that can be hard to do just the two of you, right? But sometimes having a third person in the room, you know, pursuing family therapy where it's you, your teenager and the therapist all in the room talking together, just a little bit of kind of help with the mediation sometimes can be what gets the ball rolling back the other direction. Right, into we're rebuilding trust. We're getting to a place where, as a parent, I can grant more independence and, you know, privacy. And as a teen, I can trust mom or dad's doing this for the right reasons rather than, you know, just because they, you know, don't like what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's really, really helpful. Great advice. I suppose I'm thinking about all of the pressures that families kind of face. You know, we see it a lot in our charity work, you know, the kind of pressures of kind of poverty and work and a breakup of relationships. So I'm just wondering how parents can still muster that communication in those really trying situation.
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll say a little bit, and then I don't know, Isabel, if you want to add to this. But the first thing I would say to families in that sort of situation, and hopefully this is reassuring, is in our studies, it doesn't look like what matters is like the sheer amount of monitoring. It doesn't seem to be what's important is like you asked a certain thing a certain number of times, you monitor really intensely. What seems to be more important is that you were sort of intentional or thoughtful or strategic about what you did. So when I work in the clinic with families who are in that situation, a lot of other stuff going on, a lot of other stressors, my mind goes to prioritization. Wait, what can we pick out that feels sustainable for you, for your situation as strategies for monitoring? The other thing I would say is don't be afraid to ask for help. And so monitoring is a team job. Especially as your team gets older, you're going to have less and less time where you're actually with them, right? And there's a lot of other people in their life, right? Friends, siblings, teachers, coaches, neighbors, all of these people are people that can help both in understanding what your what's going on in your team's life and then also supporting you and kind of balancing one more responsibility in terms of all the other, on top of all the other things going on in your life as a parent.
Yeah, I think what you said about intentionality is really important. I would also say, you know, as you hear Will talking, you can kind of get the sense like, we don't know exactly, like it's not a one size fits all situation, you know? There's a lot going on with a lot of different families. People are in different situations, have different backgrounds, right? So the common line here, what's really important is just that you're trying. And parents are going to make mistakes. You know, parents might have to ramp up their monitoring or reel it in. And that will change and adapt with the situation and with the family. So, you know, if it feels hard, it's because it is. Like, we're still figuring this out as researchers and parents are still figuring out as parents. But what really matters is just that you're trying and you're giving off the impression to your child that you really care.
Yeah, I love that response because I think there can be a lot of fears of getting it wrong and that kind of stopping people trying. But actually the kind of the effort, the connection, it feels like it's at the heart of what part of the benefit of parental monitoring is that care.
Oh, yeah, okay. And it's trial and error even as the therapist, right? So many times I suggest to a parent, go home and try this, and it comes back, it didn't work at all. So that's part of the process and figuring out what works for you and your family.
Let's turn a little bit more to your paper. The essence of the paper seems to be the concept of parental monitoring has been reconceptualized over time. It's changed a lot over the last 50 years. So could you unpack that for us a little bit?
So, you know, what's really important to keep in mind through this is just that, you know, 50 years ago, people thought parental monitoring was important. And today, obviously, we still think it's pretty important. So that aspect hasn't changed. It's a timeless concept. What's changed more is how people study and conceptualize parental monitoring. So in 2000, a pair of landmark papers came out and, you know, basically shifted the focus away from what the parent is actually doing. So these things like asking your kid about their day and stuff like that, to the actual knowledge and things that a parent has in their mind about their kid. And it might seem like a subtle shift, but now the field has kind of centered more on this study of parental knowledge, so the things that a parent knows, rather than the things that a parent does. And the point of this paper is really just trying to shift that focus back to things that the parent can actually control in order to give some good recommendations for parents about what to do in order to foster that sense of trust that Will was talking about earlier.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit more why this distinction's so important between what a parent does and what a parent...
For sure. So, you know, monitoring as we define it is something a parent does to gain knowledge. So knowledge is part of it, right? It's part of the motivation. But it doesn't only function to give a parent knowledge. It can also function to give off a sense of, you know, of care from the parent to the kid. And why that's so important is, you know, for example, you know, during the course of a day, a parent might ask their kid, okay, like, how's your day going? Who are you hanging out with? That might function to give a parent knowledge. But over time, if the parent's consistently asking the kid, how's your day going? How are your friends? It shows the kid, okay, like my parent's involved in my life. My parent cares about me. And that goes towards a longer establishment of trust over time. And so it's not actually necessarily the knowledge that a parent gains from asking those questions. It's really the impression that they're giving off.
Yeah, because I guess there's times, I suppose I'm thinking about my parenting again, I think there's times where maybe I was given misinformation, but there's still the process of asking was building the bond and attachment with my children. Is that part of what you're research has been uncovering?
Yeah, that's a really good example, Mark. And one way to think about it is like, what's successful monitoring, right? So if monitoring was all just about finding out information, then like in your example, it didn't work, right? Because you didn't get, you know, true information. You got misinformation. I like that word. In our kind of sense of it, we wouldn't call that a failure, right? We would say another reason monitoring is important is just because the message it sends to your teen, right? That you care about what's going on in their life. That can have its own impact that's healthy, independent of maybe you didn't find out all the details about what happened or what went on.
How's this kind of reconceptualizations change the research field? Like, what was the kind of implication of this kind of change in direction?
Well, you know, I think it really changes how we study monitoring and how we assess it. So, you know, if we think of monitoring as the same thing as knowledge, which is the thing we're moving away from, but if we think of it that way, then we could just ask a parent, okay, you know, what do you know about your kid's life? And that would be the only way to assess monitoring. But if we think about it more as, you know, as these like attempts by the parent and behaviors that the parent does, then we can get really specific with what we're measuring. So we can say, you know, what did you do today to get this information? You know, what sort of things did you say to your child? Did you track their location? When did you do that? And if we have these more specific ways of measuring monitoring, then we can see how that impacts the youth's behavior.
Yeah, I'll add to that a little bit. And this one I might do a retake, Mark, because this is kind of the crux point of how to explain it. So your question, Mark, was sort of what's the point of the reconceptualization, or like, why does it matter? Could that, right? So it's knowledge. Okay. I think it goes back to kind of what we call a success, or how we figure out what is effective monitoring. But earlier, we were talking about all the challenging trade-offs and tricky stuff involved as a parent. It's not a simple one-size-fits-all thing. When the field moved toward thinking of the goal of monitoring as solely to get knowledge, to find out information, that's what makes it successful. That steered a lot of the research toward, okay, what strategies of monitoring give you the most knowledge, right? We're saying the way we want to think about it is instead, what strategies of monitoring set your teen up for the best adjustment, the best success, the best healthy development, right? It's a different question. It sounds similar, but it's a pretty different kind of philosophy of what are we trying to do in the research, not just to find out information about what's going on in the teen's life, but to set them up for broader success.
Okay. So it feels like it's much more about, you know, the impact and the relationship rather than actually a kind of an information exchange, a kind of like, how do you, you know, gather information? Because I guess, especially with technology, there's lots of ways of gathering information that increase knowledge, but don't necessarily do that kind of bonding and attachment aspect that you're describing there.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, like there might be cases where a parent goes on Find My iPhone and sees where their kid is, but the kid has no knowledge of that at all, right? So that doesn't really affect the kid, or maybe like the parents, you know, repeatedly doing that does affect the kid. You know, we don't really know. But if the kid doesn't know about it, then that sort of like changes how we study it too, right? So we're assessing it both from like the parent's and the child's perspectives as well.
Yeah, the example of those phone apps, so like the real popular one is Life 360 or Find My iPhone. A lot of people use on the iPhones. One way to think about it again, when we go back to knowledge, is like knowing where your kid is like the most basic form of monitoring. Like Isabel was talking about, for 50 years, people are talking about that. One way to look at it is it's all about knowledge, when those apps started and we could track the phone, did that totally solve the problem? No, right? Because I might be able to see a little dot on the map about where he is, but I want to know more than that, right? I want to know who is he with? What is he up to? Why is he there, right? So again, I think thinking about that example shows or supports our kind of broader idea of monitoring is about more than like literally knowing where your teenager is on a map.
Yeah, I think that example really brings it into clear focus, doesn't it? You can know where your child is for an app, but actually some of those kind of anxieties and the issue of safety is probably not necessarily totally resolved by having that knowledge.
Yeah. And on the, we haven't brought this up yet, but I think I also hear from parents that these changes in technology have also changed like kind of my expectations of myself as a parent. Right. It used to be without this technology, there was just kind of no way to know this level of detail about where my teenager was at all moments. And that almost now having the technology, right, has changed like what I feel responsible to do in a way that some parents say is kind of overwhelming. Right. There's so much to possibly monitor, so many possible things I could do, and I only have so much time or energy.
Yeah. And I think also going back to one of your early questions about like, you know, autonomy being a little bit like too involved. You know, some of the stuff that we've found is actually like parents want to be doing more of this sort of monitoring. And kids sort of take it as kind of a given nowadays that you share your location with mom and dad. So the lines of like what is invasive and what's not become very blurry once, you know, especially technology is taken into the equation.
And do we have a sense of how that is linked to child development and well-being? Do we have a kind of sense of whether this is, you know, whether this feels like a, you know, this increased monitoring is a force for good or not?
I think my answer, Mark, would be that's a really great question. And unfortunately, we don't have good answers. Some of these technologies have gotten popular very recently and move very quickly. So we just talked about kind of the location tracking and the phone. Another one we hear about all the time is what my teenager is doing online, social media. And because the technologies move so quickly, the research really hasn't kept up with it. So I think, unfortunately, we're a little bit behind in terms of being able to say, for example, for what your teen does online, do what you should do, this is going to work best. We can make some guesses based on research we've done before, you know, that kind of general monitoring of your what your teen is up to. But when it comes to the technology stuff, there's a lot to be learned still.
I think it's a really difficult space for parents to be in at the moment, actually, kind of where they find that balance in a world that's changing kind of very quickly.
Yeah. And when we do these studies, like we just finished one where we were interviewing parents about like how they're approaching this right now, monitoring what their teen does online. And we meet parents and hear answers that are at totally opposite ends of the spectrum. Right. So parents who tell us, I don't even give my teenager a smartphone, right, because I'm so concerned about how would I really know what's going on, all the way to parents who say, to me, that's way too much of a invasion of privacy, right, to be like thinking about what are they doing online, what's happening in their social media accounts. So I think that speaks to there aren't a lot of good answers right now where parents are doing such different strategies.
Yeah, I think advice or sort of the good news about all of this is that, you know, adaptability is really important in regular monitoring and monitoring online. In a lot of cases, you know, one of the difficulties is like if we're measuring monitoring, we don't know where this monitoring is coming from. So did it get started because the parent was just like, I want to structure my kid's environment? Or did the kid do something and then the parent's like, I have to monitor it? And so like going back to the technology thing, I think, you know, in a lot of cases, some parents are like, I don't even want to touch it. I don't even want to go there. But also like once your kid, if your kid sees something or if your kid does something online, parents will typically react to it. So like keeping your mind open and keeping your options open and making sure that you're being super adaptable as a parent is really important, both in the real world and, you know, adapting to these online things that, you know, honestly, a lot of parents, you know, might have knowledge of until their kid goes on.
Yeah. And I think, it also, what Isabel was just saying, speaks to your question earlier about how to strike the balance, Mark. And now I'm forgetting what Isabel said that made me think of that. Isabel, can you remind
adaptability,
me?
Adaptability, responding to what your kid does.
Yeah. Okay. So what Isabel just said, I think also goes back to your question earlier, Mark, about how do you strike the balance? And I think something we can confidently say is that good monitoring is matched to kind of the level of concern for your child. Right. So if your child or teenager has just never done anything at all that's risky or concerning or potentially dangerous, I wouldn't be suggesting to you to do really intense monitoring, right? You always want to match. And sometimes over time, as your child gets older and changes interests and activities, you might need to increase the monitoring, you might need to decrease the monitoring, rather than it's like, pick one thing and do it forever.
Yeah, that again, I think that's great advice. Sometimes I think we're looking for really clear guidance. You know, if I do this, then everything will be okay. But it feels like it's much more dynamic and changeable. And that process of assessing risk and kind of like where the child's at is an ongoing changing process.
Yeah, and your listeners who have more than one kid already know this, right? Because they're realizing they don't do exactly the same thing for each of their kids, right? So parents have an intuitive sense of the need to adapt and match, and we would just encourage them to lean into that.
I'm just wondering about, you know, you said that the research field was still catching up with some of this. I'm just wondering whether you've got any further research planned, or are you aware of any other research that's happening in the field that's going to come online soon?
Yeah. Well, Will has been doing a lot of very programmatic work on parental monitoring recently. So we started off writing this, you know, pretty big paper on our conceptualization of parental monitoring and sort of laying out some foundational principles for how we can study it. And so I think like that is a huge push towards, you know, really thinking about this in a specific way, because as we've alluded to throughout this conversation, it really changes from family to family and situation to situation. So having a very detailed understanding is really important. In terms of our studies, we've got a lot going on in the future, I think. I mean, we've written a few IRBs and proposals to study parental monitoring in different ways. We have this one study that we just launched that's looking at a specific night out of a teen and the specific things a parent does throughout the course of just one night out. So like a Saturday or a Friday. And then, you know, how that, you know, how the parent's collecting information and making an effort with their kid. And we're linking that to different things like, you know, adolescent disclosure of information. So that's just an example of a cool specific way that we're measuring these monitoring actions.
Cool. I love that. That sounds really interesting to bring it down into a case study of what it looks like.
Yeah. So we're really interested in this topic and doing some of our own research. And I would say the good news when I talked earlier about we know less about like the digital monitoring, that's a really active research space. So actually, even in the UK and Europe, I think is some of the best research right now, people doing research on, sometimes it's called digital parenting to mean kind of all the stuff that falls into that bucket. And I think if we do the podcast again in 5 years, there'll probably be a lot more to talk about.
I'm also just wondering whether there's any kind of policy or system impacts of your work. Is there anything you'd kind of like to change at, you know, maybe more strategic policy level?
Yeah, it depends, Mark, on kind of which system you're talking about in that question. I could give you an example of one that I think is a really helpful cross-system policy, and that it's changed since the beginning of my career, which is, at least in the U.S. now, a lot of schools have online gradebooks. So as a parent, you can log in and see, you know, this is how my teenager is doing in different classes. These are assignments that have or haven't been turned in. These are test grades. And when I started my career, that was like a part-time job for parents. Like when they had a middle school or high school who was struggling at school, emailing, calling 6-7 different teachers trying to get replies. The school setting up those grade books has made a lot of parents' lives like so much easier on that monitoring front. On the other hand, I also work with parents who say, yes, we have electronic grade book, but the information in it is completely out of date or wrong. And so it might be only at the very end of the quarter, suddenly I see all these missing assignments pop up that got uploaded the last second. So in that case, it's like worse than nothing, because you were, as a parent, thought from there, everything was going great the whole quarter. So I think any system that works with kids and teenagers, something they can do to help parents with monitoring is make it easy to routinely get trustworthy info about how things are going. And I think the more that part of monitoring can be taken off parents' plate, the more parents can spend that energy on the trust, the relationship, the communication, rather than just like getting basic information.
Yeah. I also think just in general, changing the way that we talk about this kind of stuff is also really important. It was funny, that example that you brought up at the beginning of the podcast of like you mentioning parental monitoring to your kid and then thinking that it's spying or snooping, you know, like, it's a funny example, but also it kind of gets at the way some people think about parental monitoring as like this like bad word. I don't know if I want to mess with my kids' autonomy, their independence, you know, where's the line? But opening up conversations like this and thinking of it as just a way to build that trust and a way to, you know, have love and communication in your relationships is really important across the board, you know, for schools and for parenting programs and for policymaking.
Yeah, that's a great point, Isabel. And what I'm kind of concluding, Mark, is we need a rebrand of the term better than monitoring, because it's a little bit, there's some sort of stigma around it, right? Like it's a bad thing to do. So we'll have to think about that. I don't know if you have ideas, Mark, of what we should call it instead.
We'll have to speak to the ACAM marketing team, see if they can come over and rebrand for parental monitoring. Yeah, but I agree. It kind of does have those connotations of snooping and something kind of that's invasive. Actually, what you're talking about is, you know, is relationship and trust and it's not that. But yeah, rebranding sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, an analogy sometimes I use with parents in clinic, you know, is if you think about your own relationships, like your husband, your wife, if every day you came home and you never asked at all what happened in their day, right, that would be sending a message, right? It's not so much you have to know every single little thing, but that monitoring is about more than just information, right? It's about relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And that example kind of brings home the balance bit as well. Kind of like you wouldn't want your relationship to be monitoring your every movement either. Yeah. Okay, look, we're coming to the end of the podcast. I just wondered whether there's any kind of like final kind of take home message for our listeners.
Sure, yeah. I think coming back to some of the main points here, it's really important as a parent to be intentional and thoughtful with monitoring. So what does that look like? If you're not doing any monitoring at all, maybe start doing a little bit more. If the monitoring doesn't seem to be effective, maybe change up a tactic. And going back to a point from earlier, like if it feels hard, if you're starting to feel discouraged, it's because it is a hard thing to do to strike that balance we've been talking about. So just try, just keep trying. And the more you try, the more you're sending the message, as Will said, that you care and that you want a good relationship with your kid.
Thank you so much. Great final send-off message. It's been really lovely speaking to you both. I hope our listeners have enjoyed the podcast. If you enjoyed the podcast, then please leave a review and subscribe to the ACAM podcast. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. Pleasure.
Thanks.